Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. You're listening to a new The Changemaking Podcast with Chloe Mestoghi. Each episode will introduce an area of technology that needs work and highlight the changemakers working on it. Join Chloe and guests as they tap into their passion about equity and rights for all. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
And welcome to the Changemaking Podcast on ITSB Magazine. I am so thrilled to have Alan Michaels on it with me today, and we're going to talk a little bit about his talk that he gave at Black Hat this year called The Use and Abuse of Personal Information. For those that do not know who Alan Michaels is, he is the director at the Electronic Systems Lab at Virginia Tech Hume Center. Welcome, Alan, and thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Chloe. Great to be here.
So let's first go into the first question. Not everyone knows why they should care about their personal information being out there online. So let's first address that, which is, what are personal identifiable information and why should we care?
Well, personal identifiable information, or PII as you'll hear it called a lot of times, it's really anything that would tell any other user or, you know, company, anybody, about you uniquely. So it could be your name, your address, your email address. You know, it could be something that contains some content about you. Now, in terms of why we care, that's more or less a way that they can reach out to you. And kind of depends. Do you want them to or don't you?
Exactly. I know whenever there's a breach, that information gets out there. And you know, it's one of those things that's still a problem trying to convince people that they should care about their security. And I feel like they never do unless they experience a direct breach versus an indirect breach. It always seems like it's really hard to have those conversations. And I think this goes into my next question for you, which is, how do online entities use and abuse our personal information? Because maybe that might be the reason we should address is sharing the why we should care about it.
Well, number one, they typically use your information because you give it to them. You know, it can be something as simple as, you know, for Amazon to get a package to my doorstep, I have to give them quite a bit of information. Now, our study really didn't include anything on the financial aspects, mainly because you get into legalities quickly. But, you know, we ought to care because it tells a user how, or a company potentially, how to work with us better. It might be crafting better ads, giving us content that maybe we care about better, but it could also be that they're going to add us to a list, sell that to a third party that now has kind of that same targeted subgroup. They know who to reach out to. And, you know, it could be as simple as it's just annoying, or it could be, you know, something that could be used maliciously.
And what about their affiliates?
Well, we did part of our study was looking at privacy policies. And if you're like most people I know, you simply don't read the policies when you sign up for things. Affiliates are a big gray area where it includes, at least in the privacy policy language, almost everyone. You know, anyone that helps the company do business the way that they define, and they don't really tell you who the affiliates will be. So we can't tell you who they'll be. And that's part of the experiment we tried to run is to, you know, if we sign up with a company, we put into place kind of the mechanisms to track that when we received from a third party, it could have only originated with that first company we signed up with.
Gotcha. So this study that you shared at Black Hat was about a 12-month overall study. Do you mind sharing a little bit about, like, what made you want to study this in particular?
Well, it started as an argument, actually, with me and another faculty member as to where spam and scams are coming from. You know, we each have our own impressions. But, you know, the question was really, can we look at the question scientifically and try to track which company, which news organization, which entity as a whole is the source of contributing our information into that massive black hole of spam and scam. We did this more or less by creating 300 fake identities. Now, I don't want to share my own information, but you know, we acted as if we were in fact real people. You know, there are lots of online tools, really cool ones, you know, being able to do fake name generation, fake demographics, even fake faces. And we then shared those as a one-time transaction with any of the companies. And, you know, we kind of sat back and watched what happened over 9 months. So, you know, first few months setting up the whole collection, and then you think of it as dangling all the private information out there and seeing what happens.
So sometimes when we start doing studies, we have kind of a theory in our mind how this is going to turn out. Did you happen to have something like that?
We definitely did. And I have to say we were wrong. Basically, we thought that everybody was sharing information. And, you know, in part of our experiment, we had to restrict, like, number one, I don't want to get fired. So I don't want the kids collecting content that, you know, would go against the university and the IT policies. So we ended up being relatively conservative in which companies we picked. Whereas we thought virtually everyone had affiliates that, you know, really were using and then somehow sending out, you know, additional third parties with our information. What we found is that the respectable companies really don't share. I think 293 of the 300 accounts did not show any evidence of sharing it outside the original organization. That really surprised us. The other thing we found is there's a wide disparity in the use, but kind of bordering into the excessive use, which clearly is abuse, for how much traffic, content, et cetera, we could receive. In some cases, I think we were receiving, you know, 100 phone calls into an account during the 9 months. In the case of Fox News, I think we got 2,356 emails over 9 months, 44 on the election day. So, I mean, it just, you know, sometimes the use of it and the quantity was a surprise.
Was there anything that came out from the research where you had some concerns that you never had prior to it?
Well, being a mathematician, I kind of assume that the world is going to be kind of an ordered arrangement. You know, I could explain why something happens. We attempted to look at all the privacy policies, and based on the language, what they tell us, we'd be able to predict how they actually use our information. We really didn't see any correlation between the actual observed behaviors and what the companies are telling us. So, you know, to some degree, that's a concern. It's just, I can't look at the documentation that's there and or required and somehow make a guess as to whether they're a good partner or not.
That's really interesting. And this white paper just got released as well. What are some of the key takeaways that you have that you want the readers to have when they, after reading it?
Well, there's a lot of analysis about the raw content, you know, how many emails, voicemails, what types of voicemails. Some of those boil down very interesting. You know, I think 10% were, you know, car warranty, where obviously we don't even have a car here. You know, beyond the raw content, we did comparisons with the privacy policies, as I mentioned. You know, so a lot of mathematical details, you know, into how we graded privacy policies, an entire rubric to try to explain how we scientifically tried to work down and come up with a quantitative score. And then the comparison of that with all the raw content. We did find some interesting results with trends across industries, did a little bit of a deep dive with politics, certainly had an interesting election this past cycle. And so being able to compare some of the major candidates, the content, even things like sentiment analysis of the emails or content that we received, giving an idea of who's being positive, who's negative, et cetera. And I think the last thing in the white paper is we're looking at taking the lessons learned from this experiment and moving them towards a much larger scale experiment. So we have a kind of initial design of what that larger scale experiment looks like.
So who should be reading this white paper?
Well, I mean, I would like to say virtually anyone who cares about their personal information. Realistically, I think it's both the consumer that, you know, is a little bit wary, wants to understand how they can share the minimal amount of information in order to do business across the internet. But at the same time, I would really hope that some of the companies that write the privacy policies, that, you know, they would look at this and think of ways they can communicate to the consumer an actual usage, kind of a tangible usage estimation, so that we know how safe they are to interact with.
So yeah, everyone should probably be reading this. In other words, it's so needed. And I have to admit, Alan, it's so hard to try to convince people to care about how much they share online, especially younger generation. And sometimes even older on Facebook. It is, it's hard.
This has been a blast of a project because we had 15 students from 10 different majors. I mean, there really was a diverse interest in what the research questions could be, how we could design the collection, how, you know, what types of questions, conclusions, and just the data analysis that's necessary. So, I mean, I know there is a broad interest. It's not just, you know, kind of a computer science problem.
That's good to hear, which then leads me to my next question with you is, how can we change the situation? How can we do something about it? And I want to break it down into four different parties. So the first one I want to ask is on the company front. What can companies do to help this situation?
Well, you know, they could be a lot more transparent as to what the word affiliate means. You know, if they are going to share your information, I think it behooves the consumer to tell them more precisely what that means. The fact that we found most companies protect it well, at least respectable companies, that's actually a good sign. But I think we don't have the assurance that they will do so.
Yeah, it's definitely, I feel like we're kind of going into this new wave of people being concerned about their privacy. It's become more of people having this understanding, like, I want to know what's being shared, why is it being shared? And I think GDPR kind of helps with that a little bit, which is like, hey, well, are you, how comfortable are you with the following things of us tracking you? I think that definitely is one of those things, which then I have to ask is, what can legislators in the US do to protect us in a sense?
So we definitely saw different behavior for our European accounts, which had the assumed GDPR coverage. I don't think we had quite enough accounts to test the California rules, but we did see that in many of the policies, the companies are highly responsive. They have to be, but they're responsive to the guidelines that are put in by the government. I would hope that the kind of results we get out of this type of project will lead to informed decisions for our regulators so that they help protect the consumers, but not in ways that, you know, are significantly overbearing to the companies. I think it really just comes down to requiring transparency.
Yeah, I think transparency just makes things a lot easier for everyone. I feel like when we have a trust as a consumer, it allows us to make better decisions. It makes us actually want to go with them versus their competitor who isn't being as transparent. I think transparency is the thing that no matter what generation you are in, you care about it now. As a community, especially the InfoSec community, what can we do?
Well, I think there's the potential to design tools that actually obfuscate personal information. So, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of companies, they'll ask you for, you know, a list of info. Some is required, some I would say is pretty marginal for them to deliver the service that you want from them. So, you know, I think there's going to be an opportunity. How do we make some of those tools? An example of that would be, how do I create just a one-time use email? So if I go make a purchase with a vendor that I don't deal with, you know, every day, maybe I don't really want them having my email, but I just want something long enough for them to finish the transaction I have. I don't really want to give them my personal one though. So, you know, it's almost like the idea of burner personal information.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. Like, oh, just make a email address or use a fake email address to collect the information that you need and move on. Because I think we're all nervous about all these breaches that keep occurring, right? Because during the pandemic, there was a surge of 300%, I believe, which is scary. That's letting us know that, you know, we're not doing enough. But it also means that as consumers, we need to start reducing the apathy that we may have. What about for the average individual? So say if the person is not in information security, is there anything that they can do to protect themselves and protect others?
I think the biggest thing is recognizing anytime you put information out on the internet, you know, make the assumption that it can be shared, whether it's intentional, and that's mostly what we were trying to measure, or if it's more from a data breach, I'd be very conscious what you put up there. And, you know, there are many, many guidelines on the internet. Like, you know, people say the how-tos, things like looking for the padlock up at the top, make sure it's HTTPS, other things. And I realize most average users might not be tech savvy and looking for that, but, you know, very much avoid any type of website or kind of transaction where that isn't present. You know, if you can think of this in a little more of the physical realm, you know, would you do the same transaction, you know, handing over dollar bills at a place that looked really, really shady versus, you know, had a nice shiny storefront? It's just now we're looking at kind of an electronic version of that.
Excellent. Alan, thank you so much for joining this podcast, and thank you for sharing so much about the use and abuse of personal information. And I hope our listeners take further actions on this. And if anyone is interested, the white paper link is detailed below, as well as their GitHub page, which has basically the release of the raw data from their research. Thank you, Alan, once again.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Change Making Podcast with Chloe Mestaghi. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.